Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. This is the big conversation. It's the great debate, but it can only be a debate if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. 44208-601-4555. That's the number to call. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line. And remember, if you get on the television or radio, as it happens with me this evening, then you need to have the volume on your set down at zero, or no one will understand either of us. You can SMS me also at 44780008066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. This time, as I just alluded to, for the very first time, I'm delighted to say that we're also broadcasting live on Colourful Radio. Wonderful, Colourful Radio. So let me welcome the listeners of Colourful Radio to call in also on 44208-601-4555. Remember, this number is for this show only. Now, Turkey, talking Turkey, are the chickens coming home to roost, if you'll forgive the pun. Is Erdogan, the Prime Minister, once all-powerful, is he now paying the price for the policies he's been pursuing across the border in Syria and elsewhere over these last few years? Is he earning the wages of sin? There was absolute turmoil in the country over the last 7 days. More than 1,000 people were arrested, more than 2,000 people were injured, many of them seriously. Two protesters were killed, and one policeman has now been reported as dead, having fallen off a bridge whilst chasing demonstrators outside of Istanbul. The protests spread quickly from Taksim Square in the center of the ancient citadel of Istanbul to more than 90 cities around the country. 90 cities is too big for anyone to organize, so they must have been spontaneous. At least that's my point of view. I know there are conspiracy theorists out there who will contest that. But it seems to me that a critical mass of opposition to Erdogan has developed in Turkey. It's widely disparate. Some of it I'm sympathetic to, some of it not. Some of it has never accepted an Islamic government in Turkey in the first place, even though Erdogan has won 5 elections, has delivered a steadily improving economy. The average person in Turkey is 1.5 times better off than they were 10 years ago when Erdogan came to power. He started out by saying he wanted zero problems with the neighbors, but now he's got maximum problems with virtually all his neighbors and is at war openly with one of them, namely Syria. It started, the proximate cause, you could say, was the decision to destroy a park in Taksim Square and turn it into a shopping mall. So far, so bad. Happens all the time in all sorts of places. That's why it's unlikely that this little issue has provoked these great events. Not a little issue for the environmental campaigners, of course. 1.9 million trees had to be cut down to make way for a third bridge across the Bosphorus, which has been called after a sultan whose principal claim to fame in history is to have been a massacrer of Alawis. Alawis numbering in their millions in Turkey and, of course, being very influential minority in neighboring Syria. A very, very political choice of title for the bridge and a lot of trees to cut down for a third bridge over the Bosphorus. Erdogan is also building a major new airport, as well as the aforementioned shopping mall in Taksim Square. But these were just the proximate causes. People are very unhappy in Turkey at many things. Some are unhappy at the perceived Islamicization of the society, even though Erdogan stood on the platform of making Turkey properly an Islamic country and was elected as prime minister so to do. Some have never accepted that. Some, especially in the army and amongst the general class, have never accepted anything other than the Ataturk model of Turkey, a totally secular, indeed anti-religious model. In fact, most of the generals now, more than 50% of the generals in the Turkish army, are either in prison awaiting trial for planning coup d'etat or have been cashiered or retired before their time. So there's a lot of problems for Erdogan on that front too. The left doesn't like him for a range of reasons. His free market policies of letting the market rip may have profited many, but have impoverished some. And the labor unions are not happy about the extent to which they are shut out since the fascist military dictatorship, actually, shut out of meaningful collective bargaining. Liberals and secularists, well, they want to hold hands with their girlfriends in the streets and even kiss them in the parks. But that's not legal in Turkey under Erdogan, which makes you wonder why he was such a blue-eyed boy of Britain and the United States. But that's because of foreign policy issues, which we'll turn to, no doubt, in the course of this discussion. Israel is furious with the United States after an almost laughable series of farcical mistakes made by the United States government in relation to issuing contracts for the building of a new military base, a giant secret military base in Israel between occupied Jerusalem and Ashdod. No one was supposed to know about this secret base, but the US government asked for bids from construction contractors openly in the trade press, giving all sorts of details, including the depths of the cellars in which the missiles in the base are going to be stored. Very helpful, said Israel, to anyone who wishes to attack it. You couldn't make it up. It's Austin Powers time. Britain has had to announce compensation to 5,000 victims of torture in Kenya in the Mau Mau Rebellion more than 50 years ago. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, £20 million, but it actually works out at £3,000 compensation each. And of course, the vast majority of the victims of the torture, and I'm talking torture here, I'm not talking even just your waterboarding, we're talking about men who were castrated by the British colonial administration in Kenya. I'm talking about women who were multiply raped and sexually abused. That kind of torture, £3,000 ain't much, especially 50 years after the events when most of the victims have died. William Hague did not accept legal liability. This was just a kind of ex gratia payment, hoping that the problem would go away. But lawyers for the remaining victims, and they number in their tens of thousands, are adamant that it's not going to go away and it's not going to be settled out of court either. The Mau Mau Rebellion was, of course, merely the Kenyans asking for their country back, asking the British colonial administration to pack its satchels and leave them alone so that they could build an independent country. William Hague accepted in the House of Commons this week that Kenya's march to independence was marred, as he put it, by widespread torture and unlawful killing. Indeed, Mr. Hague, indeed. On the subject of unlawful killing in Syria, where the rebels that we are paying for are eating the hearts on video of their opponents, and I mean that literally, listeners to colorful radio might not be able to grasp just what that might look like, though we've spoken about it here on the show before. But one of the Syrian rebels had himself filmed cutting open a chest, taking out a heart, eating it, and then following it up for dessert by eating the man's liver. William Hague and the British taxpayer paid for it because the man was a commander in the so-called Free Syrian Army, which is, of course, a client of ours. Anyway, it seems that the Syrian rebels are being routed. They were routed from the town of Qusair near the Lebanese border just yesterday, and the balance of coverage, even in the American newspapers and the British, is that the tide has turned, the battle has swung in favor of the government in Syria and against Mr. Haig and Mr. Kerry and President Obama and David Cameron. It looks like they're not going to get their way. They're not going to win that war. And Al-Qaeda is not going to come to power in Damascus. Hallelujah, I say. These are, of course, only my views. I want yours. And if they're different to mine, they'll be prioritized. That I promise you. My telephone number is 44208-601-4555. You can call me now and you'll get on the air. Tay is from London and he wants to talk about Turkey. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George.
Welcome. Good evening. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me on.
Welcome. Go on.
Yeah, I saw on a Twitter page about AKP defending police brutality.
Yeah.
And 2 days ago, he apologized for it.
The deputy prime minister apologized. Erdogan has not yet apologized.
No. I don't think he's man enough to do so. And let's remember that a lot of people who are AKP voters, and we've got a lot of evidence for this, are out on the street. It's not just secularists or leftists, it's Islamists. Everyone's out on the street because they didn't like the way their fellow citizens were being treated. We might have differences in Turkey, but we're all brothers and sisters, so it doesn't matter what we believe in or what we don't believe in. But I don't know what he's defending. Is he defending people's houses being inside the house through the window, police launching tear gas? Is he defending the police shooting a kid in the head and the kid's died now? Is he defending plastic bullets? What's he defending? People were reading books in Gezi Park. Nobody was doing anything. And I've been following this for 5 days. I've been sharing information because, as you know, we had a media blackout. I haven't slept properly. And I have archived every video, every picture that we have. There was nothing that they could defend. Everyone was sharing, all the protesters were sharing information that saying, don't be provoked, don't hit the police. Even if they hit you, don't do anything. And no one did anything, and we have proof of it. I don't know what he's defending. He's defending basically trying to murder his own brothers and sisters.
Well, let me just put, play the devil's advocate. Erdogan said that the protesters were vandals and criminals and alcoholics and looters, and that he wasn't going to put up with it. In fact, he was having to restrain the 50% of the country that voted for him from setting about your friends in the park. What do you say to that?
Well, that's just natural for someone who's propagandized by himself and believes in his own life to say things like that. People were told, and they did specific. In fact, let me give you the statement from one of the leading Islamic socialists movement in Turkey, from İhsan Eliaçık, who said, said to the AKP, listen, atheists here are not drinking out of respect because it's candle night in Turkey and it's a religious celebration in Turkey, out of respect to our religion. And they're here protecting us from the police brutality, and you're going around trying to kill Muslims on the street. Who's really protecting their religion out here? No one is an alcoholic. No one was drinking. In fact, police, I have evidence of this too. Civil police were out there giving out alcohol to people to make it look like they were actually drinking and vandals. No one was vandalizing. We have enormous amounts of evidence for this. Nobody was doing anything. It was the police. If anything, police was the one who was rioting and vandalizing.
Okay, look, thanks for that. And keep hold of that archive, if I was you. Thanks for the call. Nasir is on the line from London on Syria. And remember, if you're listening to us on the radio, you can call 208-601-4555. Nasir, go ahead.
Yes, hello, Joe. It's me again.
Welcome. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks for having me here on the show. Anyway.
Go on.
I would like to comment on Syria, actually. In the war, there has never been a winner. The only winners are those Zionists who are supplying weapons and et cetera, et cetera. I think that's what we call in Arabic language a fitna. Yes, it's all politics and it's all... You know, the biggest players are those behind it. And I think I need, you know, what I would like to see, those ulama, you know, who have responsibility to make a wake-up call and try to advise people, you know, what's right and what's wrong. Because it's really hurtful when you see innocent people get killed every day for the sake of what?
Indeed, Nasir, but let me just correct something. The people supplying the weapons to the rebels in Syria are not the Zionists, but the Arabs, the Muslims. It's the countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar that have supplied the weapons to Al-Qaeda and other groups that have cost the lives of 90,000 Syrians in the last 2 years, have destroyed the ancient city of Aleppo, have wreaked such damage on tombs and on religiously significant places, as well as on universities, as well as on houses and the lives of the people. So there are many things in life that can be blamed on the Zionists, but this isn't one of them. Of course, Israel is supporting the war on Syria. Anything that will cause a problem for an Arab neighbor that is in a state of belligerence with Israel will be done. You can hardly blame them for that. What do you say to Arab countries who are participating in mass slaughter of other Arabs, Muslim countries that are paying for mass slaughter amongst Muslims? Nasir, thanks for the call. Hafiz, I think, is in Scotland on Turkey. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, good evening to your viewers and listeners, please. I'm just going to contribute about what is happening in Turkey.
Yes, go on.
My view is that what is happening in Turkey, the NATO also has to come out and then condemn it, because what happened exactly in Turkey is what is happening in Syria.
Yeah.
The prime minister was supporting the rebels instead of him supporting them to come to the negotiating table and stop massacring the people. He was supporting the rebels, telling them that they should fight instead of negotiating. Now it's happening to him.
Yeah.
And he also used the same strong hand that they accused Assad of using.
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's why I said at the beginning, are the chickens coming home to roost? After all, one response to the events in Turkey would have been to demand that NATO arm the demonstrators so that they can defend themselves against the Turkish government. We could have demanded the establishment of a free Turkish army. We could have asked jihadists from all over the world to invade Turkey to defend the people against their government. We could have launched wave after wave of economic sanctions against the government of Turkey for the brutal way in which it has handled peaceful demonstrators in its own major cities. Of course, we did none of those, because we're not the kind of people who want to see destruction in Turkey. We don't want to make things worse in Turkey. We want Turkey to be successful. We want it to be peaceful. We want it to be just. And that's why we say instead that the government of Turkey has to negotiate with the population in Turkey. Yes, it won the election. Yes, it got 50% of the vote. But that means it didn't get the other 50% of the vote. Democracy is not just about putting an X on a ballot paper every 5 years and the winner takes all. Minorities have rights and their interests have to be respected and negotiated, navigated with and through. Unless you want social discord, unless you want the kind of scenes that we've seen all over Turkey these last 7 days, I for one do not. Thanks for that call. Hussein is on the line from London. The line, by the way, is 208-601-4555. Hussein in London wants to talk about both Syria and Turkey. Hussein, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome, George Galloway.
Thank you. Go on.
Thank you very much for your time and efforts you are doing.
Thanks.
On this program. I think all the people that support this Syrian war, they are paying the price of it. Like Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and the Qatar, all of them will follow the signs of Turkey
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you, in just 48 hours, Erdogan went from being the blue-eyed boy, best friend of the United States and NATO, in just 48 hours, on Fox News, CNN, CBS, ABC, New York Times, Washington Post, in just 48 hours, he became a villain. And if the trouble in Turkey continues down the same track that it's currently on, then I believe that Erdogan will discover that the United States friendship is fickle indeed. And that once upon a time, Hosni Mubarak was their best friend. Once upon a time, the Shah tyrant Pahlavi was their best friend. Once upon a time, Ben Ali in Tunisia was their best friend. Once upon a time, even Gaddafi was their best friend. But it didn't save the life of Gaddafi or Pahlavi, who was left like a wandering tribesman in the end, who was looking for somewhere to pitch his tent, because the United States is ready to dispose of and discard even the closest of friends whence it suits them. Majid's on the line from Tehran. He wants to talk about Turkey. Majid, welcome to the show.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Well, Erdogan came to power under fascinating slogans, and the world thought Turkey was entering a new era. But nothing changed regarding Turkey's relation with the Zionist state and the imperial power. He made his country a big base for NATO, like Turgut Özal, the former and the late prime minister, did. He, hand in hand with the reactionary and puppet regimes of the region, like Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and the Zionists, shared the crimes the terrorists committed in the only independent Arab country, that is Syria. So whatever good issues he had during his election, what he did regarding Syria is unforgivable.
Well, it's unforgivable by me, and it's unforgivable by you. The issue is whether it's unforgivable by the people of Turkey. He's their elected leader, and it's them that he has to answer to. And the signs are that his plan to create a powerful executive presidency with himself in the president's chair, a kind of Putin-Medvedev job share switch with now President Gül, who would become the prime minister, but with the president, Erdogan, being the top dog, it looks like that project lies in ruins, at least. That's one definite consequence, I think you can say, of the events of the last 7 days. Thanks for the call from Tehran. Mahmoud is on the line in South Africa. He wants to talk about Syria. Mahmoud, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How are you?
By the grace of God, good. Go ahead.
Thanks, my brother. You are our hero, and Press TV is our radio station. But 2 points.
Thanks.
I want to say that, of course, I oppose sectarian killing amongst Muslim, Shiite, or Sunni. But, however, the points I want to ask you for clarity, especially you, George, is that I don't support the minority governments in Saudi and those countries. But can you tell me, the Assad family, and again, it's an honest question, the Assad family of Syria, how many people did they kill? That doesn't mean this war is right. I oppose sectarian, and I want one nation, one Islam, and one people. Can you please help me, my brother?
Well, it's a good, and I'm sure it's an honest question. Look, Syria, like all the Arab countries, was a dictatorship, and it has to change. And the people of Syria have every right to choose their government and to change it if that is their will. And the people of Syria have every right to rise up against their government, like any people has a right to rise up against its government if it has no democratic path that it can travel. But the so-called revolution in Syria is so sectarian, so extreme, so takfiri, that every religious minority in the country is petrified to death at the thought of them coming to power, that virtually every woman in Syria is terrified at the idea of living under Al-Qaeda, and the vast majority of Sunnis in Syria want nothing to do with this insurrection. That's why it has failed. After the break, I'll definitely dilate on what needs to happen, in my view, in Syria, so that we can have a transition to democratic government there, as indeed in all parts of the Muslim world, God willing. God willing, I'll be back in a couple of minutes after the news. Stay with me. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation. It's the great debate, but only, of course, if you join in. We're joined for the very first time, but not the last, this evening by listeners to Colourful Radio. And either you who are watching or you who are merely listening can call the show on 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back, get a clear line, and remember, if you get on the air with me, then the volume on your set has to be down at zero, or no one will understand either of us. As I always say, these are my views, but I want to hear yours, and if they differ from mine, then you will be prioritized. We're talking Turkey. The events in the last 7 days appear to show Erdogan, the once all-powerful prime minister, a man many believed was making himself a modern-day Ottoman sultan, has reached the limits of his power. Or like Icarus, if he will forgive me, quoting a Greek, he has flown too close to the sun. In Syria, the battle appears to have swung decisively in favor of the government in Damascus. At least that's what all the pundits in the serious newspapers all over the world are writing this morning. But, of course, the show isn't over until the fat lady sings. The show in Kenya, for example, the show whereby the Kenyan people had to rise up and fight the British in order to become an independent country and were treated to murder and torture as their reward. They were tortured in such numbers that William Hague has just announced £20 million worth of compensation to just 5,000. Just 5,000 of the victims of British torture, which included castration and which included mass rape and sexual assault of women prisoners. They're getting £3,000 each. Well, is that compensation enough? Should Hague have done more? What should we do about the fact that the British government still has hundreds of thousands, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of uncompensated victims of British imperial crimes around the world? The British courts grind exceedingly fine, but the problem is they grind exceedingly slow, and the victims of these crimes are, of course, dying every day. Aidan is in London, always worth hearing, wants to talk about Turkey. Aidan, welcome back.
Hi, George. Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you about Turkey, because this in Turkey, the whole thing started out as an Occupy movement.
Yep.
It was basically the demolition of a park,
yep,
which wasn't going to be turned into a mosque or a shopping centre. I mean, this is really bad disinformation that's coming out from the Western media. I mean, the Occupy protest was completely hijacked by illiberal, anti-democratic, military-backed opposition groups, mainly made up of the fascist secularist political party, the CHP. The party has, for the last 10 years, colluded with the army and tried to trigger a military coup in the hope of overthrowing what is the democratically and by far the most democratically elected government, not in the Muslim world, but in any Western country right now and in North America. Nobody has the mandate that the AK Party or Recep Tayyip Erdogan had in Turkey. Nobody has. He was elected 50% of the country, of which 85% of the people went out and voted. No country in Western Europe or America has a political party and a leader that has got that much support by its own people. And because they can't defeat them in the elections, they're trying without success to overthrow them by force. I'm glad this protest has happened anyway, because now the people of Turkey can see with their own eyes how in the past these same people would cause mayhem in the country, giving the army an excuse to roll its tanks down the streets and take the power to serve their own interests. They can't do it anymore. Turkey is a democracy. The generals are behind bars. And those self-serving, selfish minority elite that used to run Turkey for 70 years, that used to run a bankrupt Turkey for 70 years, just for themselves, keeping 95% of the population poor, well, they can
result in Aidan, as always, there's several points that you make that are very powerful and some unarguable. But there are some that are just plain wrong. First of all, Turkey is not a Western country. Turkey is pretending to the United States when it's at the table with NATO. It's pretending with Prime Minister Netanyahu, with whom Erdogan just reformed full diplomatic, including military relations, that it's a Western country. When it's talking to the European Union about joining the European Union, it describes itself as a Western country. But of course, in its efforts in the East, it's not portraying itself as a Western country, but as the leader of the Muslim world. Now, Turkey has always, to some extent, been slightly schizophrenic. Does it look West? Does it look East? Is it secular, Ataturkist, or is it Islamic? These are normal dichotomies within Turkish society. But Erdogan has taken this matter to its extreme. Just down the road from Istanbul, he is in full military and political alliance with Al-Qaeda. There's nothing very Western about that, nothing very democratic about that. He is arming, facilitating, conveying, giving safe harbor to, and threatening to go into all-out war on behalf of people who cut people's chests open and eat their hearts, people who cut people's throats and cut their head off, people who are openly supporters of the line of Osama bin Laden and openly accept the leadership of Ayman al-Zawahiri, the new leader of Al-Qaeda. So don't come along here talking about Erdogan's democratic and Western credentials. Either one of these is a fake position. He's either a Democrat, in which case he has to know that winning elections is the beginning, not the end, of democracy. That winning elections means you have to take into account the point of view and the interests of the people you defeated, as well as the people who voted for you. He's going to have to accept that when you put journalists in prison in their hundreds, you can't really parade yourself as a democratic Western leader. And he's going to have to understand that when the entire world is watching 100,000 people in Taksim Square, but Turkish television is showing cooking programs because the Turkish media is unable to break the censorship of Erdogan's government and tell the people of Turkey what's happening in their own country, well, there's a problem here. So, Aidan, as always, like the stopped clock is always right twice a day, you're partly right, but you're largely and profoundly wrong. The AKP is a capitalist, pro-imperialist, NATO-supporting, Netanyahu-allied government. So far, so good or so bad, according to your point of view. But knowing your point of view as I do, it's very strange that you're so much in love with it. 44208-601-4555 is the number to call me. Julian's on the line from Reading. He wants to talk about both Turkey and the Mau Mau. Julian, go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Alaikum salam, go on.
Last time I spoke to you, you were at Heathrow Airport and you'd just come back from Turkey.
Ah, yes.
And your shoes were caked in the mud from the graveside of one of the martyrs from the
Mavi Marmara. Yes. Which, by the way, Julian,
yes.
When Netanyahu gave a non-apology for the nine martyrs of the Mavi Marmara, and Erdogan accepted it, Netanyahu has made no compensation to the victims of the Mavi Marmara, and Erdogan isn't forcing them to. Anyway, go on.
Well, there's 3 years on, and there's been many martyrs since at the hands of Israel. They've been into Gaza again. And 3 years ago, I think you and I both felt optimistic about Erdogan and the direction that Turkey was going.
Yeah.
But he's betrayed the Palestinian people in that sense.
He has. He has. He's just like all the rest.
Absolutely. George, you're not like all the rest. All the best with what you're doing, mate. And
thank you, Julian. Thank you, Julian. God bless you. 208 is the number to call. It's 208-601-4555. That's the number to call. This is, of course, Comment on Press TV, but we're joined this evening for the first time by listeners to Colourful Radio. And most welcome they are too. Let's hear from Andreas in Cyprus. Not quite Turkey, but getting close. Andreas, welcome. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening to you.
I just want to ask a few questions.
Yeah.
First of all, was it necessary for 100,000 people to die in Syria? Second of all, what does French of Syria mean? If these people were really French of Syria, would they not have tried to find a peaceful solution to this problem? What does it mean, French of Syria? What does the Free Syrian Army mean? Is it someone eating someone's guts? Is that Free Syrian? I feel sorry for the people of Syria if these so-called rebels ever take charge of Syria. I really feel sorry for them.
Well, I'm glad you've given me the opportunity, Andreas, to return to the call from South Africa earlier. Syria needs a transition to democratic rule. The president, Bashar al-Assad, has signed up to that. He has agreed to go to the conference in Geneva under Russian and U.S. chairmanship. And that transition will have to be through negotiation, and it will have to be under international observation. The United Nations will have to be involved. Observers from all places will have to be involved. There'll have to be free and fair elections to a parliament and then a president. I don't myself believe that Bashar al-Assad will run again. I believe he will complete, as is his right, his presidential term. I don't myself believe that he will run again. But I'll tell you this, Andreas, and not many people listening or watching this know as much and as closely the situation as I do. So hear what I've got to say. If there was an election tomorrow, Bashar al-Assad would win it. In fact, if there had been an election for president at any time in the last 2 years, Bashar al-Assad would have won it. Not just because he has qualities which no rival emerging from the rag bag of opposition parties who have a multitude of leaders has remotely been able to offer by comparison, but because people are so afraid and disgusted by those who eat other men's hearts and livers that they cling to Bashar. The religious minorities cling to him. Most of the Sunni business class clings to him. And if Bashar al-Assad were to run for office tomorrow, I believe that he would win that presidential election. The regime in Damascus is not one that I support. I want democracy in Syria. And I want the people to choose their government. But the only way to get there is by negotiation, by a political process. Kofi Annan, the former Secretary General of the UN, brought forward exactly such a plan almost 2 years ago. The Syrian regime accepted it. The opposition did not. And the Western governments that are giving them the guns and money did not encourage them to. Andreas, thanks for that. Cambus is on the line in London, wants to talk about Turkey, and he's listening on Colourful Radio. Cambus, welcome.
Hi, George.
Go ahead, sir. Our first Colourful Radio caller. Go on.
Hi, George. I admire your stand on many issues, especially when you went to the United States and you stood against the congressman.
Thank you.
And what I want to say is, what I don't understand is we have all these governments who come in under the name of Islam, which is one of the most progressive religions in the world. However, they come in and they start shoving the religion in their own out of their own interpretation of it down the people's throat, and bring about this dictatorial kind of regime, which gives the actual religion such a bad name. It happened in my country. I'm from Iran. And the same thing that happened to my country is happening in Turkey. The whole country is going to go back hundreds of years if people don't succeed and the West continue to support this regime. And this is what I don't understand. Why, when you have such a wonderful religion, is being taken as a tool in repressing people, where women are not respected, people's opinions aren't respected, various minority religions aren't respected, and the only thing is respected is the extreme Islamic views.
Well, I don't accept that either in Iran or Turkey, Cambus. You may have been out of Iran for too long. If you think Iran has gone backwards hundreds of years, as you implicitly just stated, well, you haven't been paying attention. Iran is in the nuclear age. Iran's scientific, technological, industrial, innovation under sanction has been a miracle to perceive. You're currently watching, or rather listening, to an international Iranian satellite station broadcasting in English and in Spanish and with other languages coming down the track. So the idea that Iran is a backward country is not one that those threatening to destroy it share. Otherwise, there would be no need to fear the development of the nuclear industry in Iran. It's because Iran does have a science base. It's because Iran does have a technology base. It's because Iran, if it wanted to, could develop nuclear weapons, that they are worried. So I don't know how that is going back hundreds of years. As it happens, the Iranian government is forbidden by religious fatwa to produce nuclear weapons, and means only development of nuclear power for peaceful purposes. But let me just make it plain where I stand on Turkey. Erdogan has a mandate for the measures of Islamification of Turkish life that he has embarked upon. He has a mandate for them. For example, it was the case before Erdogan that women would not be allowed into a university or a school or a public building wearing a hijab. This is completely wrong. And Erdogan has changed that. And women wearing hijabs can go anywhere they like. He's right about that. Erdogan has the right, I believe, has the mandate to say that alcohol, which I myself abhor, should not be consumed in public places. He has the right to say that because he won the election 5 times. He has the right to say that alcohol sales between 10 p.m. and 6 in the morning should be restricted. He's even got the right to say that you shouldn't have public displays of affection between men and women on the streets of Turkey, although I myself think that might be a little extreme. But the idea that women are not respected in Turkey under Erdogan is false. The idea that women are not respected in Iran because of Islam is false. In fact, if you've been to Iran recently, you'll find that women actually are extremely powerful in Iran. At Press TV, practically everybody working at Press TV is a woman. Certainly the most powerful and most effective. Sorry, chaps. Let me move on. The Israeli missiles and the base in the area between Jerusalem and Ashdod, that's all we know. The revelation in the US trade press of all the important specifications of this base would make you laugh, actually, but it hasn't made the Israelis laugh because it kind of destroys the whole point of a secret base if you're going to describe it in every detail in the American trade press. That's one of our issues. We're talking Turkey also, talking Mau Mau, and we have Badri on the line from Canada on exactly that subject, the Mau Mau uprising in Kenya. Go ahead, Badri.
Hello, George. It's a pleasure talking to you again.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Three.
Go ahead. And, sorry, you're on the air.
You brought this topic about the Mau Mau. I'm very impressed with it.
Thank you.
I would like to tell you that my grandfather had a store in Nairobi, and he's an East Indian, and he was helping out the Mau Mau. So this British convention they are giving out, does that apply to even because he was tortured, his store was burnt because he was helping the Mau Mau, you know,
yeah,
at that time.
Yeah.
And but does this compensation also, do we get it also, or is it only...
Well, look up the article in The Guardian this morning, which gives you the names of the lawyers who are acting for the victims dealt with so far, and get in touch with them. Everyone should join the queue. Everyone that was tortured by the British occupation of Kenya and everywhere else should sue the British government.
I was also tortured in a way that when I was traveling to Tanganyika at that time, now it's Tanzania, and they had European class, Asian class trains, you know?
Yeah.
So I went to the European class this cafeteria, and they really beat me up and said that how come you entered this place, you know?
Goodness me. Look, Bakri, that's what to do. Go to The Guardian and see the names of the lawyers. Get in touch with them. Sorry to rush you, but I need to talk to Bakir in Denmark on Turkey. Bakir, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, George. I want to say, you know, the sentence, what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Erdogan can only thank himself for what is going on right now. Last week, I said to myself, for those countries who are supporting these cannibals and hand-chopping fanatics in Syria, they'll only turn out to be an inferno in the Middle East. And look what is going on in the streets of Turkey right now. Let's not forget, it's not also about the shopping mall in Turkey, but in Istanbul, but also his religious reforms. So I'll not say it's any coincidence that he's on the same team as these rebels in Syria. And these hypocrites sitting in these Arab monarchs. This revolution in Turkey is just came at the right time. Let's see how he deals with this.
Well, I don't know if it's a revolution. It's too early to say that it is regime threatening. But it definitely leaves in tatters the idea of a powerful executive president Erdogan. And it probably means that Erdogan will have to pay rather more attention to Turkey in the next period and rather less attention to interfering in the internal affairs of other countries nearby. Well, that's all I'm afraid we've got time for. God willing, I'll be back here next Thursday at the same time on Press TV and also on Colourful Radio. So bring someone else with you, won't you? Until then, may you go in peace.
Make sure your television volume is set down to zero. Can I have your telephone number? So I'll then call you back to you. Make sure your television volume is set down to zero.